Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Skylar Borglum is a former state lawmaker now running for U.S. Senate. She's challenging U.S. Senator Mike Rounds in the Republican primary on Tuesday, June 2nd. She's a professional engineer and business leader who also holds a master's degree in theology. She lives in Rapid City, and she joins us today on the phone. Skylar Borglum, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Lori. It's my pleasure.
This has been an interesting, to say the least, time to run a campaign in South Dakota with limitations on gatherings and parades or Lincoln dinners and things like that. But you've also turned to social media pretty effectively to try to take questions from people and have a presence. Tell us a little bit about your campaign strategy and how it has incorporated social media and pivoted as well to a new way of reaching voters.
Certainly. One of the aspects of my campaign that I have tried to communicate to my followers and those who are just getting to know me is that in these times, we have to be adaptable, and we cannot run a campaign as a checklist like they were run back in the day. We simply are moving too fast. There are too many changes happening, and we have access to technology and social media in a way that even 2 years ago, it wasn't as extensive as we have right now. So on the one hand, certainly the best part of campaigning is getting out and meeting people face-to-face, literally shaking their hands, getting them to look me in the eye and ask me the hard question person to person. But since that really wasn't an option for these last 8 to 12 weeks, what we did instead was put me on Facebook Live just about every single night. And South Dakotans have had the opportunity to type their questions in the comment bar. So when they see me on Facebook Live, I answer the questions as they come in. And this has been there has been such a terrific response to this. I do it formally on Thursday evenings called Borglum Answers South Dakota, and then it just started picking up speed, so no matter when I was on Facebook doing a live video, anybody who had a question or a comment or wanted to know something about me could really just type it in, and I'd answer it as we went. The best part to me about that is it gives South Dakota direct access to the candidate who wants to be their United States Senator, and I believe in transparency. I believe in accessibility, and these Facebook Lives and these social media events that I've done, they're raw, they're unedited, and people have the chance to get to know me personally, and other people have the benefit of that. So the pivot really worked in our favor as a way to get the word out as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Did you notice themes emerging from South Dakotans? Were there topics that they came back to again and again that have really changed or informed your focus as a candidate?
I did. South Dakotans are remarkable in their consistency for what they worry about. They worry about America, they worry about their neighbors, and they worry about their families. And right now, what is coming across loud and clear is their concern about food security. Now, South Dakotans may not use that phrase specifically, but what they're asking about is, can our cattle producers stay in business? How can we help them? What's going on in the hog farming community? How can we support our agricultural community? How can we make sure that food is getting from the farms and the producers to the consumers as efficiently as possible? And then, of course, with COVID-19 erupting like it did, COVID-19 didn't cause any of these problems, but it really shone a bright light on the fractures in our food security vulnerability. And that brought to light Mr. Rounds' EB-5 program that he's bringing back with Senate Bill number 2778. Which invites foreign nationals into the United States on a visa for sale program, and it focuses specifically on rural areas. Well, Lori, in our rural areas, what do? We produce food. So here we have a situation where Americans cannot get the food that's being grown and produced right here, and we know that it's being shipped already through Smithfield back to China. They same time that food on American shelves had dropped by 30%. So my question is, why did Mike Rounds bring this program back when we already have deep fractures in our food system? We need to put food production and processing back in the hands of Americans. I feel very, very strongly about this. I wouldn't outsource our military to Russia. I wouldn't outsource or sell our cybersecurity to North Korea. So why are we selling ag land to and ag development to China, who already has a food shortage and is going around the planet right now actively looking for ways to feed its population?
When we talked with congressional leaders about COVID-19 and even just watching press conferences, from the governor or from the president in the White House over the last, several weeks and months, everything from Q-tips being, the wooden part of the Q-tip being manufactured in Italy to pharmaceuticals, which are manufactured in other companies. And a lot of people are rethinking how globalization works and what happens in a crisis. Are we thinking broadly about it regarding food? And I want to talk to you about possible solutions, because this is a complicated problem that, as you said, COVID-19 didn't start it. It's shown a light on it. So let's say voters send you to Washington. Where do you begin with that issue? What do you think are core things to address?
Address is, what do we consider essential for our national security? We know that we need ample and affordable food. We know that we need a strong military defense. We know that we have everyday supplies Americans rely on. And we know that certainly within that, we have the medical community who needs to have access to consistent supplies and products. So my recommendation for this would be, put together a plan of what we would consider essential for national security in the event that the globe shuts down again like we just saw it do. And Lori, I would argue that this isn't going to be an if situation. This is going to be a when situation. So let's take every possible learning that we can from COVID-19, the things we did well and the things we need to do better on next time, and put it in a plan. And then going forward, we need to decide as a country, what do we want to require states in South Dakota? Or South Dakota. You can tell how in love with South Dakota I am. I want everything here.
Right.
In the United States. So for example, in 2013, they had a Senate hearing on whether or not to sell medicinal foods to a Chinese company. Now, you and I know that it's an authoritarian state, which means even if it's a Chinese business, the Chinese government very much has its fingers in that pie. And what I would argue is we need to walk this back and start finding ways and mechanisms to break up these groups that have been sold off to foreign countries and entities that we have decided are part of our national security platform. And once we decide what those are, we can put into progress or put into process how we want to make those American again, because this is something that I think caught the American people off guard. But I'm holding our lawmakers' feet to the fire on this one. We as lawmakers, whether it's at the state level or the national level, have a responsibility to be looking at unintended consequences. We need to be planning for 30 years out, at least one generation, and we need to decide, who are we there to serve? Are we there to serve our own re-election, or are we there to serve the people who sent us and expect them to make solid long-term decisions?
How do we bring back, and I want to bring it back to South Dakota, because like you, that's often my focus and a lot of voters' focus too, even for our congressional delegation. How do we bring back those local lockers, those local butcher shops, the things that farmers and ranchers and small town South Dakotans have watched disappear over the years as things have been consolidated? How do you how do you dismantle what exists, continue at scale, but then also provide the diversity that the marketplace really needs to survive?
Certainly. Well, the first thing is there's the Prime Act sitting on the desk of a senator whose name escapes me at the moment, but that needs to get out and pass through the Senate, the House, and be signed by the President. Because what that will do is really open the door for smaller meat lockers and custom butcher shops to open back up across the country. We need to take a serious look at the regulation that's been layered and layered and layered upon meat processing facilities and ask, is this necessary? Of course we want a safe product to go out to consumers, but sometimes I think government gets in the habit of just layering on one more regulation or one more rule. And if they aren't necessary, then we need to strip those away. We've had meat lockers in South Dakota who either wanted to expand or build in some of these smaller towns, but it would cost upward of $1 million to get started. Well, there's no way that a small business in Lemon or in Belmont, South Dakota is going to be able to clear $1 million to stay in business. And so they're either restricted in their growth or they simply give up in the meantime. I think that Wyoming has done an excellent job passing laws making it accessible for ranchers to sell directly to consumers, and Iowa recently did something similar. So that could be done at a state level, and what we could do at the federal level is start incentivizing these small businesses and value-add businesses that can go into these small towns, provide economic opportunity, and serve the food producers. So that would be a major piece of the work I contributed if I were elected on June 2nd.
Do you think the packers are breaking the law? Do you think there are antitrust laws in place that are being violated and need to be enforced? Or do you think that the laws need to be adjusted to deal with packer concentration and its consequences?
My understanding and everything that I've read suggests that the packers have a monopoly. And whether they are deliberately colluding or not, I don't know the answer to that. That, I believe, is what this investigation that the President Trump has called for is all about. And my argument is more broad than that. And it's simply to say, anytime you have four companies who control 80 to 85% of the market, that's a monopoly by any definition. And so whether it's the Packers and Stockyards Act or the Sherman Antitrust Act, I don't care. But we need to break that monopoly up. And if they have been up to financial shenanigans, they need to be held to account. And if it's an unintended consequence of each four companies having a stranglehold on an industry, then no matter. But either way, this needs to be fixed, and it needs to be remedied ASAP.
Do you think there is a role for mandatory country of origin labeling in this conversation? Is there an appetite in it for Washington? How do we move forward with something that seems to be consensus in South Dakota is good for South Dakota ranchers and consumers, but doesn't seem to go anywhere in D.C.?
I think that the mandatory country of origin labeling is something that we should be going forward with, guns blazing. Cattle are in 50 states. All 50 states in the union have a cattle industry, Lori. And if there's one other thing that ties us together besides being Americans, it's our cattle industry. There is no excuse for not having mandatory country of origin labeling. I can tell you where every single truck part on my F-150 comes from. I can tell you where my T-shirts come from and my kiwis in my refrigerator. So why is it that these two components, beef and pork, why is it that these two are excluded? Well, the WTO had issues with the way the law was being applied, and they wanted those specifics fixed, but they didn't actually have an issue with mandatory country of origin labeling itself. And I've relied on Bill Bullard and RCAP USA for guidance in this area because they are the experts. So we have the appetite in America. We have the appetite in South Dakota. We have the appetite with our cattle industry. And the hang-up is going to be these packers and And here's what's happening. Packers have conditioned United States consumers to pay top dollar for their beef products. And what they're doing is importing cheap beef from third world countries that are not held to the same production standards that United States cattle producers are held to. So the U.S. cattle producers and South Dakota cattle producers, it costs them about $900 a head to produce this meat. They're getting far less than that if they can get a bid at all, which means they're not seeing these spectacular returns. Only the Packers are getting all of this money, and they're making money hand over fist. So I think it's the Packers who are really hanging on to this money-making machine that they've got, and the people in Congress, whether it's the Senate or the House of Representatives, either haven't educated themselves on these problems or are in line with what the Packers are doing. Those are the only two options. And I think that if we can get people to just understand what's going on, American consumers will be outraged at how much they've been paying for foreign beef or not knowing where their beef comes from, and start demanding mandatory country of origin labeling so they know if they want to go out and purchase an American steak or an American piece of meat, that they can get that, and that's what they're paying for.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Skylar Borglum. She is a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. The primary is Tuesday, June 2nd. She is running to unseat U.S. Senator Mike Rounds. And Skylar, before we let you go, I want to talk about the news of the day, because so often our congressional delegates are asked to respond to things that are happening. The death of George Floyd, a Minneapolis man who was killed by a police officer, that video circulated on social media. Four officers were fired. The last time I checked before we started our broadcast, no one had been charged in his death yet. If you were in Congress, and now, of course, protests have erupted in Minneapolis and are starting to spread into other cities as other people protest the death of black people at the hands of police. If you're in Congress and you're asked to issue a statement or make a statement on Twitter or what have you, what do you think would be important for you to say to people?
I think it's important that those of us who are seeking elected office or are in elected office be circumspect about commenting on other states' issues. And certainly, this is a tragedy. Nobody wants someone who is being arrested to die in custody. And I think that it's a commentary on the tinderbox race relations that we have across our country right now. I know that the race relations, whether it's with African Americans and whites or Native Americans and whites, we have a long, long way to go. We'd like to think we've made progress. I'm not sure that that's happened.